You've tuned in to All Together Now, the local collaborative news show on WGXC Monday through Saturday at 6 p.m. An hour-long listen to local neighbors, news, interviews, weather updates, public meetings, and events going on in your neighborhood and around the Hudson Valley and Capital region, from the Berkshires to the Catskills, up and down the Hudson River. Tonight, we'll talk to Bill Hughes, one of Hudson's representatives on the Columbia County Board of Supervisors, and we'll hear reports from Hudson, Albany, Catskill, Chatham, Claremont, Durham, Kingston, Indian Point, Lexington, and Litchfield County on All Together Now.
Interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Accra, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is The Weekend in Review. Some of the stories that made the headlines between Friday, May the 6th through Sunday, May the 8th. I'm Philip Grant. At the top of the news, Amelia Teasdale reported in the Columbia paper that the Chatham Village Board held a workshop meeting last week to discuss water. Mainly, the plan was to replace an open village reservoir on High Street with a closed structure. Village engineer Pat Pendergast said it was not standard procedure for a municipality to use an open reservoir like the one currently in use. Water is now pumped from the village wells to the reservoir and held there until it flows to users in the village. The process is expensive, Pendergast said, and thousands of gallons of water leak from the reservoir on a daily basis. Pendergast advised the board to have a survey of the land around the reservoir done to see how much property the village owns at the site. Colby Hamilton reported at Politico New York that it was announced on Friday, May the 6th, that the state's first court for young adults will open soon in Brooklyn. The court will exclusively handle misdemeanor defendants between the ages of 16 and 24. The court will make available young adult-specific counseling, treatment, and services. The goal is to reduce the use of jail and recidivism among the young adult population. The Brooklyn District Attorney's Office is also launching a new young adult bureau. The court is being funded by a U.S. Department of Justice grant. It is the second of its kind in the nation. The Daily Freeman reported that Scenic Hudson announced it has protected 22 ecologically important acres adjoining Claremont State Historic Site. In Columbia County, the estate of Erno Shims donated a conservation easement on the property to ensure its permanent protection. The parcel contains woods, wetlands, and 1,600 feet of shoreline along Clay Kill. The site is contiguous with nearly 1,100 acres of previously protected land, including state park land around the Claremont Mansion and adjacent farmland. Shims lived off the land for more than 50 years in a small structure without electricity or running water. Rick Collin reported at Capital Confidential that Governor Andrew Cuomo and the State Labor Department released a report last week showing that more than $10 million in stolen wages was returned to more than 17,000 victims of wage theft during the first quarter of 2016. Some of the most common ways an employer may steal wages include paying tips only, failure to pay overtime, not paying for training time, charging for required uniforms or equipment, and withholding final paychecks. In this latest effort, the department dispersed nearly $263,000 to 982 workers in the Capital Region and more than $500,000 to 646 workers in the Mid-Hudson Valley. Information on wage theft recovery can be found at www.labor.gov/wavetheft. John Mason reported in the Register Star that the Hudson Common Council Arts, Entertainment, and Tourism Committee is weighing how to distribute $20,000 in city funding for community festivals in the coming year. The committee's final decision will be made at a special meeting at City Hall on Wednesday, May the 11th. At the meeting last week, the committee gave tentative funding approval for Arts Walk, the Bangladeshi Cultural Fair, the Black Arts and Cultural Festival, the Hudson Promise Neighborhood Annual Block Party, Flag Day, the Halloween Parade, Winter Walk, a Hudson Soup Club Fish Fry, and an event by the Bindlesniff Family Circus. The committee was at odds on private funding for profit businesses and tabled a number of requests as a result. Third Ward Alderman and Attorney John Friedman, head of the Council Legal Committee, said one event, Wonderful World of Women, proposed by the Perfect Ten organization, discriminated against men. He recommended a legal opinion be obtained before a decision is made on that request. With a number of issues to be resolved, the committee agreed to meet again this week. For our final story, Jim Plank reported in the Daily Mail that the Durham Town Board received an application package for a new retail store on Route 145, and from all indications, it will be a Dollar General. Town Supervisor William Carr said he received a call from the Albany branch of Bowler Engineering last week saying the package was on its way. Bowler's client, Primex Properties, is proposing the construction of a 91,000-square-foot retail store at the intersection of Brown and Clay Hill Roads and Route 145. Primex and Dollar General have worked together on several local and regional projects. Bowler has represented Primex for Dollar General stores at proposed sites in Germantown, Shulerville, Fort Ann, and in the Berkshires of Massachusetts. The Tennessee-based bargain retail chain Dollar General has more than 12,000 stores in 43 states nationwide. There are five Dollar General stores located within 20 miles of Durham at present, including locations in Greenville, Cairo, and Palinville.
Unhappy about something you heard on All Together Now? Or maybe you have a strong opinion about an issue. Energy, agriculture, the environment, the Common Core standards, or broadband access. Don't keep it to yourself. Call 518-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message, and we'll play it on the air. Leave a 3-minute message, 518-291-9492, with your take for all you hear. Again, that number is 518-291-9492. To leave a 3-minute message that may be played on All Together Now. Thanks for getting involved in your local community.
National Weather Service predicts it'll be a cold Tuesday morning with a low around 35. Tuesday should be sunny with a high near 64 and a low around 41. Wednesday, sunny again with a high near 65 and a low around 43. And Thursday should be sunny with a high near 69.
You are listening to the WGXC News Update. I'm Alana Medlock. Katie Kosajansky is reporting in the Greene County News, harsher penalties could soon be imposed on convicted animal abusers in New York if a new amendment to Buster's Law is passed into law. Kirby and Quigley's Law would make the killing of a pet during the commission of a crime a felony. The measure is named for two family pets shot and killed during a burglary in Florida, Montgomery County, in February. State Senator George Amador, a sponsor of the legislation, said the enhanced penalty would, quote, serve as a deterrent to make criminals think twice before executing an animal or face additional jail time, end quote. If found guilty, a person could be sentenced to 2 years in state prison and be subject to a $5,000 fine. The measure was passed by the Republican-controlled state Senate for the third time in March. Republican Jim Todisco is the sponsor of Kirby and Quigley's Law in the Democrat-controlled state assembly. According to Todisco, the assembly majority would not even consider the bill. Read the full story in the Greene County News. The Daily Freeman is reporting the 6th annual Senior Citizen Day will be held at historic Catskill Point Friday, May 20th. The event is sponsored by the Greene County Department of Human Services. Department of Representatives will offer information about services available for residents over the age of 60, and local organizations and businesses will have information about services of interest to older citizens. The event will take place between noon and 3 p.m. Parking will be at Dutchman's Landing, and shuttles will be available. Rick Carlin is reporting in the Times Union. Lawyer Peter Henner from New Scotland has filed suit in state Supreme Court in Albany County to halt the review of bids in the Cuomo administration's $500 million program to expand broadband access across the state. Henner alleges the guidelines used by Empire State Development to award the competitive bids were based on unreasonable grounds and without proper consideration. The broadband initiative is promoted as an effort to expand the number of New Yorkers who get broadband service. The state will provide grants to entities that can bring broadband to those who are underserved or not served. Henner and other critics are concerned the program could allow bidders to skip areas or regions that are remote and costly to reach. Quote, millions of New Yorkers do not have access to a reasonable internet connection, which is synonymous with access to broadband. These New Yorkers are severely disadvantaged, Henner wrote. Henner also mentioned in court papers several residents within the greater capital region currently without broadband, which complicates the ability to operate businesses. Judith Elliott Brown of Greenville works with computer-aided design files, but is hindered by the slowness of her satellite internet link. She lives less than a mile from a line operated by Mid-Hudson Cable. Another company, 4750 Realty, has manufacturing space in Durham, but they were told that getting high-speed internet there would require a $15,000 installation fee and a five-year $9,000 per year commitment. Read the full story in the Times Union.
Courtney Love, leader of the rock band Hole, posted a photo this weekend with former bandmates Melissa Oftemar, who runs Basilica Hudson now, and Patty Schmiel, with the caption, "With the girls serving up a whole lot of something, maybe," unquote. Jezebel posits there may be some sort of Hole reunion in the offing. Oftemar, though, last month seemed pessimistic about the idea. Quote, "When I imagine us playing outdoor daytime stages to, like, beer-soaked 20-year-olds who don't even know Hole or listen to records, that doesn't sound healing or celebratory," she told Blast Echo.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page, and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org. In the community calendar.
And that wraps up the WGXE Hands-On Radio Daily News and Weather Report for today, Monday, the 9th day of May 2016. From the WGXE Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Today's interview of the day comes from William Hughes Jr., a Hudson representative on the Columbia County Board of Supervisors, who talks about his work there and what's going on in Columbia County with At Issue host Victor Mendolia from Wednesday, May 4th.
So we'll get right into it. We're with William Hughes Jr. Bill is the supervisor from Hudson's 4th Ward. You've been supervisor, I guess.
10 years now.
Yeah, wow.
Yep. So time flies.
That's five terms.
Yep.
Wow. And previously, before that, you were on the Common Council.
On the Council.
For how many terms there, two?
Two terms there.
Right. So you're like the old sage at this point.
Yeah, I'm getting there, I tell you.
So tell us a little bit about you are our most frequent guest here at Issue, and we always find the conversation interesting, and we find out a lot about Columbia County government that we don't really, you know, hear in the papers and other things. So maybe you could give us a little bit of an overview about what's going on this term and this year, and then we can sort of hit more specific topics.
So obviously, you know, as most people know, we have a new chairman, Matt Morrell. I'm still developing a relationship with Matt. Have had previously a great relationship working with him when he was director of the Youth Bureau. That was the title he held when he worked for the county.
Before. So we should say before we get going, you are the minority leader of the Board of Supervisors, meaning that you represent the Democrats. You're the head. You're the leader of the Democrats on the on the board.
So I'm still, you know, working and developing a relationship with the new chairman, like I had with Chairman Pat Gratton, and I think everything is going well. Chairman Morrell is he's in the office, you know, more. He's certainly in more accessible. Not that I couldn't reach Pat. Matt is just there every day.
Well, Pat had another full-time job,
right? And Matt is retired, and he's there every day. Both of them have a wonderful attitude and very approachable, so I really like that. They're very open to ideas. And some of the things we're looking at, we're really looking at cost savings, and we're trying to figure out a myriad of ways of how to do that. And some of the things we're looking at, for example, is the business office. We're looking at a centralized business office, and we're really moving along with that pretty fast.
What would a business office, centralized business office do?
What we had earlier in previous years, each department, for example, in the county, were doing their own payroll, and they were responsible for all their own expenses and following their own vouchers and really recovering their own monies. And in the past, that got us in quite a bit of trouble. If you were to look back, if you were to go back to the days, I'm saying 5-6 years ago with the whole DSS debacle where we you know, we overestimated $9 million or where we didn't file vouchers in time from OFA. This will go a long ways towards eliminating those type mistakes. Mm-hmm. We will have a centralized business office that you will have a double and triple check of those kinds of things, along with, you know, our controller and our treasurer who are pretty active right now. You know, you can call and get real-time financial data and statistics, which in the past just didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So we're getting a much better under these two chairmen, we're getting a much better understanding of our county finances and where we are financially. We know that we have low cash on hand, and we are slowly building that reserve up so that we don't have to in the future put that pressure on the taxpayers. So that's one thing. We're in the immediate, we're looking at doing the close of Pine Haven, and that should, we're projecting that to be sometime at the end of this month, probably more likely in June. Mm-hmm. And one of the big things for me,
the closing of Pine Haven?
Well, we sold it, so
right,
we're closing the deal.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So
okay.
Let's right. clarify that. Yeah. one of the big things for me.
So for those who don't know, Pine Haven is the county-owned nursing home in Philmont, and the county recently entered into a contract to sell the property to a provider
Premier.
Of nursing home services, right?
Yeah, it's a company, Premier, out of Long Island. Mm-hmm. From what I've seen so far, you know, they've been doing an outstanding job, and I'm happy what they have been doing to this point. My biggest fear initially when we were going through this whole deal about selling Pine Haven, it really was a financial burden on the taxpayers in Clement County. But my initial thought was, look, you know, as elected officials and when we collect tax revenues, is to provide a service. And we need to ask the public whether they are willing to pay for that service. So we had that debate. And at the end of the day, it was thought that it would be best to sell Pine Haven. And so we did. My concern with that was, Pine Haven is the largest minority employer for county employees. And, you know, and so I was concerned. you know, they have a big contingency of the minority population that work there at Point Haven. And I just didn't want people unemployed, given a pink slip and put on the street. Mm-hmm. And Premier has pretty much satisfied me of that to this point, that no one, at least, they're saying somewhere around 97.5% of who is currently there will remain there. And mm-hmm. those who aren't is people who are fleeing on their own, you know, looking for other jobs and looking to move along.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty happy about that. And overall, it's looking like a good financial decision.
So how does a company like Premier turn a profit on something that the county hadn't been able to do?
So a lot of us supervisors have been asking that question, and especially Ray Stats, who was really unhappy with Supervisor Stats of Claremont, has been asking that question quite a bit. And for a company like Premier, the first thing, because we asked them, the first thing they said is, we do this for a living. You guys were doing it, you know, as mm-hmm. a service for the taxpayers. And they're able to bill more for more services, provide more services that we just didn't have in this county.
Mm-hmm.
They're able to, they're just able to build more services. They were able to bill at a different rate. You know, they come in and they understand the business so much more than we did. We were just trying to survive and provide the best care we could for our taxpayers.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to run it as a business and a profitable business while still providing that good care, and also, secure jobs for people. So they just have a better business knowledge, a better business sense on how to do it. I mean, we as the county just didn't understand the business.
Mm-hmm. Still sounds...
listening to these guys come in and give us a proposal,
yeah.
I was like, how come we couldn't do that?
Right.
You know, why couldn't we go out and hire a manager to come in like the guy they provided us, David, to mm-hmm. provide all these services?
I mean, certainly they're buying supplies in larger numbers.
Right.
They have, you know, they have any, you know, they have other facilities. So they've, you know, if they're buying, paper sheets, or they're buying mm-hmm. adult diapers or whatever, they're buying in bigger numbers. And so, of course, that keeps costs down.
Well, they also bought the nursing home across the river, Catskill, that was owned by the hospital.
Uh-huh.
So they own that one, and they own the whole host of nursing homes throughout New York State. So, mm-hmm. so, they're experts in the business.
Right, right.
You know, okay. we kind of were just floating along.
Right.
And so some of the other things that, you know, that we're looking to do is we're working on, you know, bridge projects. And as you would see, the county worked with the city. And so they're looking at the Ferry Street Bridge. And apparently that too is on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say on the list.
So that's a big change. We should talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that. I'm not crazy about it, but it's on the list. I think the county right now, our focus is to increase our cash balance, keep taxes low, and to consolidate services. We're moving along with the DSS building, the renovations. We promised that we were going to keep DSS in Hudson. We did. We promised that we were going to renovate that building. We are well along in those plans, and it turns out that with the good work of Bob Pinto and a lot of, DSS staff and our facilities people, we're going to be about $1 million under budget in completing that project. So a lot of people who are working on that get kudos. I am not part of that. I was part of keeping it here in Hudson, but I am not part of the renovation mm-hmm. committee. Supervisor Cross is on that committee along with on the chairman and a few other people.
Mm-hmm.
We have some really good things, you know, going on.
So on the bridge, I mean, you know, I think this is the first time that there's ever been a bridge in Hudson repaired by the county. Is that so? Yeah. How did that happen? And do you think it bodes well for the city going forward?
Well, the city really doesn't have many bridges that
right,
be repaired for. But I think just looking at the previous two chairmen, the relationship between.
There's a number, though. I mean, there's one on Harry Howard. There's one on on Sixth Street. There's a number of bridges that are.
Yeah.
That may not need work, but I mean, but there's a few. There's more than maybe people think because there are the ones that cross Underhill Pond and Oakdale.
So I think with the two current chairmen, with Matt and also Pat, the relationship with Hudson and the county has changed a great deal from the other previous chairman. That's one, and that's a big deal. People don't realize, yes, Hudson is the county seat, but there was some tension there between other supervisors in the city of Hudson and supervisors from the city of Hudson. I always thought it was unwarranted, but it's nice to have people in, you know, positions of authority to also reinforce what I was thinking, that it's unwarranted. We should all be working together. You know, Hudson is not a standalone. We don't survive without the county, and the county don't survive without us. So.
Right.
I think it's a good, I think it's good working together with the county. And also I think, you know, having a lot of conversation around that bridge and the importance of the bridge. I mean, I've been talking about it for the last 2 or 3 years with state officials and also county officials. And my big thing was that is the sole launch point for our water and rescue safety issues on the river. And I kept pushing that to the state that, look, this bridge needs to be addressed, you know, today. It needs to be addressed yesterday.
Yeah.
And so to
for the, maybe some people, some of our listeners may not know what bridge we're talking about. So there is there's a bridge that crosses the Amtrak tracks just north of the station.
Yep.
It's called the Ferry Street Bridge. It is one of only two accesses to our waterfront and the state boat launch. And the other access is at a grade crossing. which the Amtrak and CSX that own the tracks are trying to eliminate because they're dangerous, because cars get stuck on the tracks and people die. So now with the Ferry Street Bridge closed, the only access point both to the waterfront and boat launch, but also for the shipping of aggregate that goes out of the port, is over the Broad Street crossing, and it's extremely dangerous if one of those trucks full of rock were to stall there and then a train hit it, that could be a huge disaster. So
that cross, you know, obviously I think it was more for an emergency egress versus the mm-hmm. primary.
Mm-hmm.
But back to my point, you know, I was able to get the city's fire chief along with all our EMS and emergency services from the counties to write letters, you know, expressing their concerns and also outlining some of the issues that they had to address on the river.
It's time for radio news about radio waves.
You're listening to radio news about radio waves. Headlines from the ether. Headlines.
Boeing Boeing reports that the U.S. Navy and the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, now have a radio-controlled drone for the seas. The Navy's first ship without an onboard crew is a 132-foot anti-submarine warfare continuous trail unmanned vessel called the Sea Hunter, which cost around $120 million to build. The military claims new additions will only cost $20 million each and will be used to track enemy submarines and will be tested off the California coast the next 2 years, starting with onboard personnel, just in case some sort of failure occurs over the radio waves. This is Tom Rowe for Wavefarm Radio and WGXC.
Next, we have these reports.
May 5th on All Together Now on WGXC, Congressman Chris Gibson, Republican from Kinderhook, said he was disappointed in the expansion of rural broadband in the WGXC listening area. The retiring congressman explained to the Columbia Paper's Perry Teasdale what he's been working on in Columbia County on the issue.
Columbia County, we're trying hard to build out in our county, and yet only 4% of the county was eligible for the state money. So what we did here is we held a meeting and we brought in experts of a federal program called E-Rate. E-Rate is a subsidy program for schools and libraries and public safety entities.
Right.
And so, and myself and
that's been around for a while.
Yes, yeah. But we've actually improved it. Jared Polis and I, he's a Democratic member from Colorado. We wrote to the FCC, very pleased. Again, Mr. Wheeler has been pretty responsive. When I've written to him, I've always get a response, and he always listens and thinks through. And so he actually changed the rules for E-Rate, and now we can actually get a better reimbursement here. Mm-hmm. And so that's a strategy that we're going to use to build out the backbone, if you will, for Columbia County.
And is it going to be stringing copper wires or going to be over the air?
No, it's fiber.
It's fiber. So it's still one technology that we're looking at, not a mix of technologies?
We're doing with E-Rate is fiber. But, you know, when you're in the marketplace, there is variegation because a lot of our constituents here in Columbia County, of course, have Fairpoint. Fairpoint is going over copper wire, the DSL, and those that some have Time Warner, and they do have the fiber in some cases. And then, of course, Verizon has lately been moving to the 4G. They've been going to the wireless. And we have benefited. If you look at Columbia County, I mean, the things that we are generally really strong at are agriculture and tourism. And what we also have seen is we've seen a growth. Look, we're talking in Hudson here, and you can look at Warren Street, and you see how much antiques have made a comeback. And so we have a fair number of folks who have moved up here, at least part-time, from New York City. And this is an issue. We can actually get more growth in the county and the growth that the kind that we like, more investment in the county, if we can get more broadband.
In March, the Lexington Broadband Initiative did not win a state grant to bring better internet access to the mountainous Greene County town. But the group that wants to partner with the Margaretville Telephone Company to connect 90% of the town for an estimated $3 million will apply in Round 2 grant rollout they hope to see this summer. To bring broadband to Lexington. So the group has recorded a second song, Second Round Woes, with residents of Lexington, Margaretville, East Jewett, and Ashland to convince officials to help bring rural Greene County faster internet service. Glenda Lawton sings a solo and Jen Cowan plays piano on the song. The lyrics are on the WGXC newsroom.
First they say we'll get it. Work. For your broadband, you will get your bandwidth. That became our plan. Now the things they're saying make it all unsure. Hurting upstate families, this we can't endure. It's no wonder that we feel abused. When's our chance for grants? We sadly muse. We feel like second-hand rows with second-round woes. We take backseat only NYC blows. How they promised and wild dreams were theirs too. Banned, we're banned from round one. Yo, we feel blue. Second round comes, that's if a second round comes. We rarely get a fair shake, it's so true.
air. Even $15 turns to 12 up here. That's why we need broadband. We have so many plans. Little business engines work for many hands. It's no wonder that we are confused. Was it a case of upstate being schmoozed? We feel like secondhand rows with second round woes. We take back seat when only NYC blows. How they promised that my dreams were theirs too.
Ariel Zangla in the Daily Freeman reports that on May 3rd, the Kingston Common Council voted 8-0 for a resolution supporting legislation by State Assemblyman Frank Skartados, Democrat from Milton, that would prohibit the proposed Pilgrim Pipeline from being constructed on New York Thruway Authority property. Currently, the pipeline is proposed to run largely along I-87 from Albany into New Jersey, so the bill introduced in April would kill the project. Pilgrim Pipeline Holdings, LLC, would build two parallel pipelines, connecting Albany with Linden, New Jersey, and carrying 200,000 gallons of Bakken crude oil per day from Albany, as well as refined fuel products from New Jersey along 95 miles of the Thruway's right-of-way and 25 miles of private property. Kingston is the first town to adopt this resolution, but towns up and down the proposed path have passed several other resolutions opposed to the project. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman.
Andrea Sears reports from New York News Connection for the Public News Service on the Child Product Safety Bill clearing the Assembly.
The New York State Assembly overwhelmingly approved a bill on Wednesday to protect children from toxic substances in products. Peter Iwanowitz, Director of Environmental Advocates of New York, says the Child Safe Products Act would eliminate dangerous chemicals from a host of children's products, including toys, bedding, and sleepwear.
We still see mercury and arsenic and other known cancer and toxic agents that are routinely found in products that our kids are exposed to and are using or are wearing and sleeping on.
Similar bills have had majority support in both houses of the legislature for several years, but so far have not been allowed onto the Senate floor for a vote. Opponents of the legislation say it's unnecessary and would lead to job losses. According to Iwanowitz, last year the bill was supported by at least 40 senators, or almost two-thirds of the Senate.
These senators actually put their name and wanted to be listed as an official in-print co-sponsor of the bill. So we had the votes. The majority leader just bowed to special interests and wouldn't bring it up for one.
He says those special interests include the chemical industry, toy manufacturers, and the Farm Bureau. The Assembly also passed three other bills that are part of an Earth Day legislative package. Iwanowitz says those would remove mercury from light bulbs, require the state to incorporate environmental justice concerns in planning and permitting, and track environmental impacts on communities.
So a lot of important bills were sent over to the New York State Senate. We're hopeful that they'll bring up all of them, but in particular, we hope that this is the day that our kids are protected from dangerous toxics.
In his State of the State address, Governor Andrew Cuomo called for passage of the Child Safe Products Act. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
Ariel Zangler in the Daily Freeman reports that on May the 3rd, the Kingston Common Council voted 8-0 for a resolution supporting legislation by State Assemblyman Frank Scartados, Democrat Milton, that would prohibit the proposed Pilgrim Pipeline from being constructed on New York Thruway Authority property. Currently, the pipeline is proposed to run largely along I-87 from Albany to New Jersey. So the bill, introduced in April, would kill the project. Pilgrim Pipeline Holdings, LLC, would build two parallel pipelines connecting Albany with Linden, New Jersey. Carrying 200,000 gallons of Bakken crude oil per day from Albany and refined fuel products from New Jersey along 95 miles of the Thruway's right-of-way and 25 miles of private property. Kingston is the first town to adopt this resolution, but towns up and down the proposed path have passed several other resolutions opposed to the project. You can read that full story in the Daily Freeman. And for our final story, Andrea Sears reports from the New York News Connection for the Public News Service on the NRC ordering a new analysis of Indian Point.
The Nuclear Regulatory Commission has ruled that its own staff analysis of the cost of a serious accident at the Indian Point nuclear plant is inaccurate. The commission's unanimous decision says the analysis by the Atomic Safety and Licensing Board contains factual errors that could be misleading. Cliff Weathers, with the environmental group Riverkeeper, believes the ruling will bolster the arguments those opposed to the plant have been making all along.
A new analysis, and an honest analysis, if it's done that way, will show that this plant is not safe, it's not secure, and also not vital for the area.
The original 40-year licenses for both reactors at Indian Point have expired, and the owners have applied to the NRC for 20-year extensions. Governor Andrew Cuomo has been calling for closing the facility. Indian Point has experienced a number of serious incidents, including a recent massive leak of radioactive tritium into the groundwater. And Weathers says at Indian Point 2, which is currently offline, more than a quarter of the bolts holding the inner walls of the reactor together are either damaged or missing.
That's an extremely serious event. There's never been anything like this at any nuclear power plant that we know of.
More than 17 million people live within a 50-mile radius of Indian Point, which is located just 41 miles from the center of Manhattan. Proponents of the plant argue that it's needed because it generates 10% of the state's electricity and a quarter of the power used by New York City. Weathers says that claim was examined in a recent study commissioned by Riverkeeper.
And they have found that, yes, Indian Point's energy is replaceable today, and the cost to consumers would be negligible.
He says new transmission efficiencies already in place, renewables now coming online, and the recent repair of three gas-fired power plants damaged by Hurricane Sandy can make up the difference. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
National headlines from Public News Service.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, May 9th, 2016. I'm Mary Sherman. We're covering important topics from around the nation in today's rundown, including anti-corruption watchdogs slam new U.S. rules on money laundering, a controversial resolution in Missouri could impact women's reproductive rights, and a common blood thinner may be linked to dementia. At the top of the list, on the eve of this week's anti-corruption summit in London, consumer watchdogs claim the Obama administration's response so far to the Panama Papers money laundering scandal is inadequate. Suzanne Potter reports they're saying it could worsen America's reputation as a haven for corporate crime.
Last week, the White House finalized a Treasury Department rule requiring banks to determine who really owns a company as a way to root out shell corporations laundering money. But Elise Bean, former chief counsel for the U.S. Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, says the rule doesn't make the bank verify the beneficial owner named by the company is the true owner, not a stand-in.
We're inviting people who want to hide their identity to U.S. banks because the only person they're going to have to name is the manager of their corporation, which could be a law firm employee or an offshore corporate service provider.
The Panama Papers include records from an offshore law firm that revealed shell companies incorporated in Nevada are linked to hundreds of millions of dollars in losses from schemes to defraud Medicare, elderly investors, and people in the armed forces. The administration also released the outlines of forthcoming legislation to improve transparency. The UK is bringing together leaders from what it calls civil society this week to brainstorm ways to expose corruption and punish the perpetrators.
In the race for the White House, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump said on Sunday he was open to raising taxes on the rich, backing off his prior proposal to reduce taxes on all Americans. Trump's call for higher taxes on the wealthy is a break with Republican presidential nominees who have staunchly opposed tax hikes for almost three decades. Meanwhile, Democrat Hillary Clinton blasted Trump as reckless Sunday on foreign policy and for failing to understand how the federal government runs. Clinton said Trump's suggestions of allowing Japan and South Korea to obtain nuclear weapons are reckless and dangerous. Reproductive rights are at the center of policy disputes around the country, and now Missouri voters may be asked to change the state constitution to say life begins at conception.
The House voted in favor of H.R. 98 last week, and now it's the Senate's turn to debate it. The bill recognizes an unborn child as a person with a right to life, which cannot be deprived by state or private action without due process and equal protection of the law. It also says fertilized eggs have a natural right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But Sarah Rossi of ACLU Missouri warns the bill takes away a woman's rights.
It attempts to ban all types of abortion services in the state of Missouri through the Missouri state constitution. It would also ban quite a few forms of birth control and also put in vitro fertilization and other fertility procedures at risk.
Ash Grove Representative Mike Moon sponsored the bill that would ask voters to decide if embryos at every stage of biological development should be given the right to life. The Republican-dominated House approved it on Thursday and sent it to the Senate, where there are only eight Democrats among the 34 senators. I'm Veronica Carter reporting.
In health news, a new study is claiming that many Americans are on a common drug that's been connected to dementia, and they don't even know it. The blood-thinning drug warfarin is used to fight blood clots, and the study from the Intermountain Medical Center claims it may also raise the risk of dementia. An estimated 20 million people use the drug today on a regular basis. Children are working on tobacco farms, some of them in hazardous conditions. That's one of the findings of an audit commissioned by Reynolds American of its 373 contract farms in seven states, including Kentucky.
The audit company Footprint Bench Strength found that 40% of farms employing minors were not complying with federal law, and a portion of those had kids performing hazardous work. Justin Flores with the Farm Labor Organizing Committee says this isn't just a matter of children working on family farms.
Most of the folks talked about in the study work with labor contractors, and they're certainly not as caring and concerned for their well-being as their parents or grandparents or uncles would be.
Footprint Bench Strength noted in its audit that workers' housing and family labor were outside the scope of the commissioned report. In a statement on its website, Reynolds American says it doesn't employ farm workers or grow its own tobacco, and therefore the company has no direct control over their sourcing, their training, their pay rates, or their housing. The company says it regularly performs audits to assess the safety and conditions on contracted farms. I'm Greg Stottlemyre reporting.
Many of us have fallen victim to a high-pressure sales pitch and ended up buying something we really didn't want or need. A law in the books in Arkansas gives consumers 3 days to cancel a purchase from door-to-door salesmen or something bought at an outdoor festival or fair. It's called the Home Solicitation Sales Act, and Attorney General Leslie Rutledge says it gives you a little time to rethink if you've been pressured or charmed into buying something.
So many people don't have their just say no line down, and they get taken advantage of by these high pressure sales tactics. I didn't need it. I just wanted to get them off my patio, off my porch.
The law also gives everyone the right to cancel any home solicitation sale within 3 days of purchasing the item or services. Consumers can also cancel a sale made at any location that is not the seller's permanent place of business. I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
National Weather Service predicts it'll be a cold Tuesday morning with a low around 35. Tuesday should be sunny with a high near 64 and a low around 41. Wednesday, sunny again with a high near 65 and a low around 43. And Thursday should be sunny with a high near 69. This is Timer with the community calendar for WGXC. Go to wgxc.org and you can add events to the community calendar. Just click on the Add an Event button at the top of the community calendar page at wgxc.org. Copy and paste the information about your community event in the boxes, and soon folks like me will read your event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it at wgxc.org. Tuesday, May 10th, there's a special meeting in Ghent at 10 a.m. Ghent Town Board is appointing a temporary deputy building inspector, 10 a.m. at the Ghent Town Hall Tuesday. Chatham has a public hearing about its school district budget at 6:30 p.m. at Chatham High School Tuesday, May 10th. Kinderhook has its budget hearing at the Ichabod Crane High School at 6:30 p.m. Taconic Hills has its public hearing at 6:30 p.m. about its budget. Stockport has its regular town board meeting at 7 p.m. Tuesday, May 10th. Coxsackie has a public hearing at 7 p.m. at Coxsackie Town Hall on Tuesday, May 10th. Chatham has a public hearing and meeting following 7 p.m. at the Chatham Town Hall on Tuesday, May 10th. Ygritte Lubrock and Tom Rainey are performing jazz at Quinn's in Beacon Tuesday, May 10th at 9 p.m.
Next, it's time for the Hudson Valley Song of the Day, a performance from a musician visiting the Capital Region or Hudson Valley, or who regularly plays around these parts.
Today's Song of the Day is I Dream of TV from Circuit de Ooh. We'll be at the BSP Lounge Monday, May 9th.